Well, it's great to be back here and worship again with you, my church family. I missed you during my sabbatical. I did have a wonderful time being on a different schedule with different rhythms of work and rest. Even the work I did, I think, had a restful vibe to it. I rested my pastoral muscles and let them restore and rebuild while I exercised a different set of muscles. I'm grateful for your gift of time, granting me this sabbatical, and I'm grateful for your warm welcome back, and for the love that you all show to your pastors. I also want to give special thanks to Pastors Mariah and Paula for their faithful and steady leadership in my absence, and for Saloma, Jane, and April in the office, and many others, staff and volunteers, who kept the wheels running. Not for 1 minute did I worry or wonder how things were going, and from what I've heard, my total lack of concern was well-founded. Things went well, and I already caught bits and pieces of your summer, and today you get a few bits and pieces of mine. And just so you know, it was not a coincidence that when I laid out the summer worship themes before I left, that I scheduled a worship series on Sabbath to be starting when I just got back from sabbatical. You can see the obvious connection between Sabbath and sabbatical in the words themselves. Sabbath, in its pure definition, is work stoppage. Sabbath is something we're all called to. Not everyone has the privilege to take a 3-month sabbatical, of course, but there are many ways we can all engage in the spiritual practice of work stoppage. At the root of Sabbath is faith in God's provision. To choose to stop being productive is an act of faith. Faith that we inhabit a grace-filled world of enough. Faith that the really important work ultimately belongs to God and not to us, and that we don't have to shoulder all the responsibility. Paula opened this series last Sunday reflecting on Sabbath as God's gift of rest, which brings communion with God and others and brings freedom from that which binds us and thus forms us to be God's people in the world. True Sabbath work stoppage is a struggle, I think, for anyone with a strong work ethic. And we Anabaptist Mennonites are known for our work ethic. Maybe it comes from our theology of practical discipleship, working out our faith in daily life. Maybe some of it is purely cultural, formed in the DNA of some early Mennonites who were largely people who worked the land. But I think there's more to it than that. I think our struggle with Sabbath has a shadow side to it. Our work ethic is not the problem. There is nothing wrong with having a strong work ethic as long as we also have a strong rest ethic and a strong grace ethic and a strong gift-receiving ethic. I think the problem is that we feel too responsible for everything. We don't want to put our lives into someone else's hands. We don't want to be beholden to someone, maybe not even to God. Lurking deep within our commendable work ethic is the deadly sin of pride. The notion that we can fix things ourselves, that if we just worked a little harder and a little smarter and a little longer, then it all comes together. Shalom happens. By the way, this is a sermon I need. I planned it this way because I had a hunch I might need to hear this on my first Sunday back. If it applies to any of you, well, then that's just icing on the cake. But in just about every form of personality inventory that I've taken over the years, Myers-Briggs, Enneagram, DISC, you name it, I come out as a very responsible individual. That is, I take on a sense of responsibility, not just for myself, but for the world and people and systems around me. That's a good thing when I actually do own the responsibility, like if it's in my job description. It's less of a good thing in a life of faith. A life that requires trust in something or someone beyond my control or responsibility. A life of self-surrender. For people like me, and maybe one or two of you, Sabbath goes against the grain. It's hard to imagine that the grindstone of my life, and for that matter, my family, my church, my world, will keep right on going if my hand is off the handle. When there's urgent work to be done, how dare I take a Sabbath or a sabbatical? This attitude not only robs us of God's gift of rest, it robs us of God's gift of joy. If we can never lay down the heavy burden of responsibility, we are going to be heavy people. We will not know joy. It was a bit of a revelation to me as I began to work on this Sabbath series that the joy of God had such a prominent place in the practice of Sabbath. We don't dwell that much on joy as a characteristic of God. We know that God is righteous and just. God has standards to be met, has a will, has expectations, asks for our obedience and our alignment with God's will. But do we also know and really believe that God is full of joy? That God delights in all of us and all of creation? Do we really grasp the reality that when we and other parts of God's creation live into our created purpose and participate in the world as God intended it to be, that God beams? That God takes in a deep breath and exhales with a yes and a big smile and even laughter? And yes, I know that's me putting a human face on God. I'm speaking in metaphors, exactly like today's scripture did. The creation story in Genesis is stock full of metaphorical pictures of a God we can relate to. So let us make the God of Genesis our starting point for Sabbath. God made all things, moon and stars, mountains and oceans, graceful pink flamingos and awkward gray armadillos, and us strange and beautiful and broken human beings. And after every day of creation, God looked over everything God had made and with a satisfied sigh, savored it, smiled, and said, "This is good." I love how the Voice Bible translates those moments. You heard it earlier. Then God surveyed everything he had made, savoring its beauty, and appreciating its goodness, evening gave way to morning. That was day six. At the heart of our practice of Sabbath is the realization that God delights in us and finds joy in all creation. When we or any other part of creation live into our created purpose, we make God's day. God feels. God is passionate. At least that's what the Bible says. So if we ever talk about the wrath of God, we'd better be talking even more about the joy of God. We find God's joy throughout the Old and New Testaments, not just the creation story. We read two other examples this morning. There are many more. Explore them for yourselves. In Psalm 16, the singer-songwriter exulted, "You make known to me the path of life. You will fill me with joy in your presence, with eternal pleasures at your right hand." And in one of Jesus' speeches to his disciples in John 15, he said, "I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy would be complete." My season of Sabbath got a head start during the pandemic when Irene and I got into the habit of taking Sunday afternoon hikes after our work week ended. We immersed ourselves in nature all around the Shenandoah Valley. So it wasn't a stretch for me to keep it up during my sabbatical. In these last 3 months, I hiked 18 different trails in 6 different states and biked 7 different rail trails. Now, what's going on when you and I get out into the natural world? We often make the comment, "I meet God in nature." And I believe that's true, but we often say that with only a vague idea of what we mean, that something more or less spiritual is going on. We usually mean something along the line of, "I find peace and beauty out there, and peace and beauty are God things, so I meet God there." But let me try to be more precise theologically. And maybe your own thoughts can be more specific next time you appreciate a sunset or see a scarlet tanager. If our faith tradition confesses, which it does, that God created and sustains and loves this whole world and everything in it, and that God finds deep joy when God's creatures live into their created purpose, then what's really happening when you stop and observe and savor and delight in something in the natural world? You are literally sharing God's joy. When you delight in creation, God delights in your delight. And your joy is God's joy, and God's joy is your joy. There is communion of joy, and that is a gift of God. This can be true anywhere, not just in a remote forest. It happened to me on my sabbatical with a rainbow over a local grain elevator. Petunias in a sidewalk flower bed. Strawberries from our across the street neighbor's garden. A sunrise outside our bedroom window. Plants we bought at Lowe's. Neighborhood children delighting in a pickup truck. enjoying music in the shadow of chimney rocks, a fascinating tree, a simple wooden structure that fits its environment, beach sunrises and sunsets. 2 out of 1 million seagulls in flight. Mountaintop views that stretched for miles. And being close enough to spot a dragonfly on the eye of an alligator. And watch a roseate spoonbill go fishing. Or stare down a swallow on a farm fence. Marveling at the power of water to cut a gorge in the earth and seeing that gorge and river from a distance and up close on a rafting trip with my 2 brothers and up closer and closer and closer. You know, obviously, I wasn't thinking in those lofty terms when I encountered all these scenes you just saw. Certainly not while I was running the rapids. But I realize now, without a doubt, that I was immersed in God's joy at those moments. Whether I delighted at a beautiful landscape, or an intricate insect, or a child's laughter, or skillfully played music, or was feeling the power of water, that delight I had was shared equally by the Creator. God saw my own smile and breathed it in and savored the moment with me and smiled with me. I'm sure of it. As sure as those pictures that remind me of those moments. That is the God we worship, a God who is full of joy. Anytime and anywhere there is some part of God's creation fulfilling its purpose, God smiles. This is a transformative idea for me. If God sees creation and all creatures that way, why shouldn't I? It gives me a different lens through which to view our very broken world. When we allow our joy and God's joy to merge in this way, we will see the world differently. Even badly damaged parts of God's creation, parts we ourselves have damaged, even those parts can exhibit glimmers of the goodness that God created and can elicit a smile from God. Even badly broken people in this world, people who harm themselves or harm others, people who wreak havoc at any level of society, even they, on occasion, are capable of a truly human act. And if, even for a moment, they do something they were created to do, God savors that moment and smiles. Doesn't mean that we smile and look away from the evil they do and ignore it, but I think it does mean that our actions and our attitudes toward creation and toward other people, even our enemies, will be tinged with love and with the joy that comes from God. Easier said than done, of course. But we will be strengthened in our task the more we practice Sabbath and open our eyes and heart and senses to the things that bring God joy.